Good morning.
Fabulous morning. I think everybody had a chance to be out in the coolness before the heat began. And welcome to those I haven't seen before. I wanted to talk today about complete realization. It's a simple topic. Actually, every Dharma talk addresses a different aspect of this, because our mind has so many little ways that it twists and turns every word and the way that we understand the language, any language and language of Dharma. It can be very confusing, and yet it all relates to our ordinary experience. It can't relate to anything but our ordinary experience, because we're all ordinary. And the Buddha was a human being who was very motivated and also ordinary. He was royal, which I think the only thing that distinguished that condition for him as opposed to our condition was that he really was confident that he needed to follow his own questions. And our own questions bring us to this pass also. Often these days my talks begin with reference to our new Zen Center. And I think that's really apt here. Way of organizing a monastery or a temple in China, in Japan, there are two wings. There's the administrative wing, and then there's the meditation wing. And very often, people who live at these places of practice are either engaged in the administrative wing or in the direct practice meditation wing. And I think that is pertinent to our own understanding also of Dharma practice, in that we do have a new center, and everything that we do, you know, there are kind of two aspects of our practice. One is developing deep, quiet awareness, deep and vast and broad quiet awareness. And the other is bringing it into usefulness in how it informs and lights up our moment-by-moment activities. The process of having a center is a bodhisattva work, and we're all engaged in that in our own way. Some people have a real penchant for meditation, and some don't, and also are not particularly interested in meditation, but are very interested in the Buddha way, in the way of the Bodhisattva, the way of activity. And so our mission is to open up the Dharma for people of all temperaments and all intentions in relation to practice. So this is how it pertains to kind of the traditional way of organizing a temple. There's the administrative wing, the people of action, and those who are much more contemplative. We also, at different stages of our life, are more or less contemplative. We may be very action-packed until we get a really rough diagnosis, and then suddenly contemplation becomes extremely central, fueled by panic, fear, and also mystery. You know, what is life? What's going to happen here? How's it going? So attending to the daily round, we attend to developing samadhi, which is thoroughgoing completeness, absorption in completeness, and also the bodhisattva way, the way of service, and expressing and supporting all beings to be awake and realize their completeness. So what we're doing in this practice, and actually any full-on spiritual practice, is we're realizing completeness. Realizing completeness. That's a really interesting phrase, and actually I picked those particular words up from Keizan Zenji. Keizan was the fourth successor to Dogen. Dogen was the person who had very deep realization and organized the, is kind of the forerunner of the Soto Zen way, which is the way of, as opposed to Rinzai. Rinzai uses koans and is a very rapid and kind of aggressive energy practice of Zen, and Soto is much softer. Dogen was a meditation master. Keizan was he also was considered a Buddha. Dogen was considered a Buddha. Keizan was considered a Buddha in that they were deeply realized human beings, which we all aspire to realize deeply our truest nature and our truest possibilities in our life, how to live our life in the truest way. But Keizan was, had it been just Dogen, this we may never have received these teachings. It was Keizan who was very, he was a very connecting, warm, embracing personality. Dogen was much more internal as a personality, according to all accounts. And I really like the description of that I found, maybe it was in online, it was Keizan Jokin collected the stories of the transmission of the light. Transmission of light is the stories of all of the major realized masters in this lineage. And the transmission of the light is really what we're about. We're receiving the light of our own awareness as we practice. So it's a wonderful phrase, the transmission of the light. But where is this thing that I was going to use? The description of Dogen and Keizan are like two wheels of the cart. The cart only works if both of them are working. So only if we have, if we are working on realizing in stillness and silence, eliminating all distraction, penetrating into the completeness of each moment, and then Keizan applying it to life. Those are the two wheels of the cart, realization and application. Stillness and activity. If we are realizing completeness, let's think about the word complete. Usually complete refers to something that is over with and done. It's all finished. The dishes are done now and again. The laundry's done. You complete classes, you complete all of the requirements for a degree, and you live a complete life. And that the completeness comes at the end, when it's all finished. But in realizing completeness, in the sense of this phrase, it's not all done. It's never all done. It's ongoing. And that's what Dogen talked about, was practice enlightenment. Practice continually, moment by moment, awakening, moment by moment by moment. It is not done. And that's true to the nature of how we be. We can have times of being very clear, very internally still, so we're quite sensitive and accurate in our awareness. And other times where we drift back into the old ways, depending on all the conditions, internal and external. So we're not talking about completing a task. We're not talking about getting all the way done. You know, some people say, I'm done with koan practice. I've completed the koan curriculum of 648 koans. Well, that's foolish. We're never done. All we need is one koan, and all we have is one koan, which is our life. And who knows if that ever becomes complete. It depends on how you understand complete. Because even when we die, our life's, the effects of our particular life are unknowable and continue. So as a spiritual term, nothing is ever done. And also, nothing has ever begun. How did you? When did you start Zen practice? We have a tradition in this practice of giving way-seeking mind talks, which is our spiritual autobiography. And it's very interesting because most people say, "Well, Zen, sitting with a Zen group. The first time I did that was blah blah blah." But actually, like for me, I started Zen practice when I was 2 years old, and I had asthma, and I had asthma attacks, and I had to attend to every breath. So when I finally came to Zen practice, which I never even knew anything about, it was like, oh, I remember this. And very often, that is what people say when they first settle into a state of concentration, of samadhi. Oh, this is so familiar, I had forgotten. It is the inmost intimate sense that is so moving, so open-hearted, so simple and direct, so unburdened, right? Realizing completeness. So an experience like that happens in the moment, in a moment. So realizing completeness is something that happens in a moment. And it is all-inclusive. There's nothing left out. There are no edges to that kind of awareness. We have a phrase, so minute it enters where there is no gap. So refined, the Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle. I love that phrase, minutely subtle. Because this kind of intimate awareness is minutely subtle. And in that minutely subtleness is a profound relaxation of and from self. We are released in that moment. So it's a taste. Very often people will say in a retreat, we go into retreat and we think, well, okay, I'm deluded now and I'll be enlightened when I come out. You expect like, bam, something happens, the self disappears and that's it. But that's like a cartoon. That's a cartoon. Much more likely is there's just a moment in all the struggle of a retreat, of a Zen retreat, there is a moment that is very reassuring. That's all that it takes is a taste of emptiness, which is also quite full. So in this way, when we realize completeness, we awaken to what is perfectly manifesting in this moment, which is the source of Buddha wisdom. When we're in the condition, when we're in the midst of ordinary conditions, the ordinary conditions of our life, what we're used to, we can dull down our motivation to stay this minutely present and drift into kind of a vague mental world of habit and distraction. So I'm in the midst of moving, and I was chuckling as I came over here. I am really distracted. I'm looking at two places this afternoon, and I'm packing up my old place, and there's a lot of distraction and anxiety. But yet, sitting down in Zazen, I have the luxury of being able to drop into the completeness of this moment. There is nothing missing, there's nothing to worry about, right? It all works out some way or other. And there are no edges to this moment. There are no edges to complete, realizing completeness. There's no edge to the moment. If you were to stop for a second and maybe even close your eyes, see if you can find an edge to the experience of this moment. As a matter of fact, see if you can even find a moment. Because a moment is a noun, it's a thing. So it exists and then it doesn't exist, right? But that's the nature of the moment is it's continuous. There is no moment. It's a convention and we all fall in with it because it's useful. It's very useful. So realizing completeness is a moment-by-moment thing. If you think about swimming or riding your bike or walking, it only happens in the doing of it. We swim in the waters of our life. Sometimes they're warm, sometimes they're cold, sometimes they're clear, sometimes they're muddy. But they're always complete. Which is one reason why in Zen practice we're not prejudiced against difficult mind states. The point is not to eliminate difficult mind states. The point is to recognize their nature. So that we don't in spiritual practice become more and more limited, we become more and more expansive, as our life is truly. Our life has no edges. It's always complete. It's not about knowing or not knowing. When you're swimming, it's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. When you're walking, it's not a matter of knowing or not knowing. It's just being in that particular activity. And so the complete experience of thinking also includes thoughts and all their associations. It's so important to recognize thought for what it is. Thought is not the world. Thought is really interesting to watch. All of its characteristics and its content. Thought is how we bring self into being and maintain self. This is something to investigate ongoingly. So it's easy to confuse our thoughts with the world. In one way, our thoughts make up the world. They structure the world. They give it form. They are the forms. And they certainly, our thoughts certainly represent the information that we receive through our senses. However, there are limits to this because in a certain way there are times when thought is so dense and entrancing that we don't even notice our sense information. Have you had an experience like that? Where you suddenly realize, oh my goodness, I'm really cold or I'm really hungry or whatever. Endless possibilities there. So in that way, thoughts have nothing to do with the world. At the same time, they make the world. There's so much going on all the time that we don't know, that we are not aware of, beyond our senses. Our senses only register a certain range of energetic and physical phenomenon. But there's so much that's unseen. And when I was putting this together, I was remembering the time when, as a good example of this, I was downtown at my office and I was riding my bike and it's an old banged up bike, so I just always left it. I never locked it. It wasn't something that anybody would want. And it was always there when I came out. I mean, for years. And then one day, I came out and it wasn't there. I was so surprised. It's like, wait a minute. So while I was upstairs involved in my work, somebody had come along and had a whole life and a whole decision process and a whole, you know, taking it away kind of experience with this member of my family, this bicycle. I carried my kids on this bike, you know, and they're all grown up. So there's so much always that's going on outside of our awareness that we are affected by. That's important to recognize when you're making any decisions or choices. It's like, it's just your best, it's your best guess, really. So it's wise to be aware that there's always the unseen in addition to the known and the knowable. The only thing we know at this moment is our experience. And our experience, which is complete in that sense. Oh, right. So, you know, another example of this is you can be very focused and suddenly somebody will pop into your mind and then the phone rings and there they are. When they pop into your mind, all that you know is you're thinking of that person. But there's something very mysterious also going on which you don't know, which you're not attuned to. These are the things that I have noticed in practice, and perhaps many of you have, because many of you have been practicing for quite a while, that the more you practice with awareness and really opening the ability to be very thoroughly aware and very sensitive, the more these kinds of things happen that are mysterious. There is deep mystery abroad. And there are so many examples of it. It's like we're happening up here, and then all of this deep river of karma is going on, and every once in a while it just pops up so we can see it. I think that's part of the delight of practice, of a life of practice. And then thinking about our, you know, that we are people of the senses. This is the sense realm, the realm of, what's the word? Delusion and samsara. The realm of samsara is the sense realm. The delusion realm, the realm of clinging and attachment and thinking we know. And we're limited to our senses, but when you start reading natural history and learn about all of the studies of different animals, it's really amazing. Like bats, you know, we can hear a certain range of things, but bats echolocate. We can't do that. I can't echolocate. What do flies see? They see in every direction. We don't do that. Dogs have very acute hearing, as do deer. If you've watched deer, you know, their ears will go when something begins to be sounded over here, and they funnel it in. And actually, this can be helpful, by the way, to do this if you can't quite hear. But dogs also can smell. Their smeller is 800 times more acute than ours. Can you imagine being a dog? Can you imagine what the world is like if you can smell that acutely? There's a book by a woman who wanted to figure out what that would be like, and so she started She lived in New York City, and she started crawling along the sidewalk and smelling.
Oh my God.
And she said, even with our very limited organ, she started to smell in what, I mean, who of us goes like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But she could pick up a lot. And I suggest you do it, because I tried it. And I smelled more. I have a pretty good sense of smell, but I smelled even more by doing that. But anyway, dogs, 800 times what we can smell. So if we think we know, we only know a little bit, according to the conditions of our own physiology. And then we apply that to our psychology, and we apply that to our cognitive styles. And it's very important to realize. It's very useful. So our senses tell us a little bit about the world. They tell us what we need to know to live as humans. And our mental apparatus, our reasoning ability, our ability to remember, to notice patterns, analyze, ask questions, and use our imagination is extremely powerful. And yet habits of thought seem to be because probably the laws of inertia are even more powerful. If you think about what's going on in the world right now and our inability to envision a world that is different, exactly, and to envision the path to get to a very different outcome from what seems to be most likely right now. Working with the ability to imagine. Some animals do it a bit. We do it a lot. But we're very influenced by all of the other, by the collective imagination in the direction that we point our imaginations. How about in those directions that we haven't pointed them? That might be very useful. So realizing completeness is an aspect of insight into Buddha nature. And it is not a thing. Realizing completeness is not a thing. It's a moment by moment emerging clarity and sensitivity. The primordial nature of great emptiness, also called Sambhogakaya, which is one of the words, one of the three aspects of awakened mind, Sambhogakaya. It's mentioned in our meal chants. Realizing the primordial nature of great emptiness, the mind that is all potential, into which form emerges in its temporariness and in its co-beingness. And emptiness is a word that gives people a lot of trouble. It's not a black hole or a state of nothingness. It's more like a state of fullness. Everything is arising without effort, without thought, spontaneously appearing with clarity. That's one of the phrases that's used. It's wonderful to contemplate. Spontaneously appearing with clarity. That's what this moment is spontaneously appearing. If you look for the source of this moment, you can narratively say, oh, well, it was the moment before, but that's the narrative, that's not the whole. So if there were no emptiness or this primordial truth, everything would be blocked. Nothing could move, nothing could develop, and nothing could manifest. That's also what is said about permanence and impermanence. Impermanence is one of the marks of existence. If things were permanent, nothing could move. So this spontaneous radiance of unceasing clarity is the meaning of this term Sambhogakaya, which is also called the enjoyment body, which reminds us to enjoy our lives, to appreciate the wonder, the mystery of how life emerges and what the rules are about how it does so. The enjoyment body, the quality of presence, the completeness. My life is the completion of meaning. That's a phrase in one of the chants that's done by the Dharma Rain Zen Center. My life is the completion of meaning. My life is the completion of meaning. That is a very profound and subtle and beautiful description of the experience of samadhi. And samadhi, complete, the release into the completeness of this moment. So I'll stop there. I hope that this has clarified everything for you.
Completely.
And inspired your practice, because we count on each other and each other's practice to be a continual source of inspiration for each of us. It goes in every direction, and we never know in what ways we're inspiring others. So please be glad of your practice and deeply engage it. And don't worry about not knowing.
Page 5 of your chant.